passion. That man was his brother-in-law, and used to beat his sister regularly, until he finally killed her. He found the man, beat him to a bloody pulp, then hopped on a plane to LaGuardia that evening. Enzo knew exactly what he was doing. He was exacting revenge. He got suspended, Enzo, I remind him. This is a big deal.
Third-grade suspension is not a big deal.
It's frustrating that Enzo is refusing to acknowledge that this is a big deal. It makes me wonder even more about his younger days and what he used to be like. Did he really used to get into fights like that all the time? Maybe he did. After all, he managed to assault his brother-in-law without any injury to himself. You don't do that the first time you ever throw a punch. Enzo Accardi is a good man. I believe that with all my heart. He has taken good care of our family. But more and more, I wonder about his past. I wonder what he has done and what he is capable of doing.
28.
I don't want Nico moping around the house. He might be grounded, but I also want him to have some socialization aside from tagging along with Enzo to a few of his jobs or sitting in my office at work. So, the next morning, while Nico stays behind in his room, I walk Ada to the bus stop so that I can arrange a play date with Spencer. As expected, Janice shows up to the bus stop with Spencer, who has his leash firmly attached to his backpack. She nods cordially at me, although I recognize I'm not her favorite person. But the boys are good friends, at least. After the kids board the bus and it zooms them away to school, I clear my throat and offer Janice my best smile. "Hey, any interest in a playdate after school today?" She snorts. "A playdate? You have got to be kidding me, Millie." Based on the vehemence of her response, I should probably just drop it. But I can't help myself. "Why not?" "Nico was suspended." She is wearing a bathrobe on top of a long nightgown, and she wraps it more tightly around her bony frame. "For fighting."
"He was defending a girl who was being bullied."
I sound like Enzo, but he did have a valid point.
"I'm sure." Janice sneers at me. "Honestly, Millie, even if this hadn't happened, I hadn't planned to allow your son back at my house again."
"Why not? Spencer loves him."
"Spencer is a child."
She pushes her horn-rimmed glasses up the bridge of her nose.
"I did not appreciate Nico's behavior in my house. He was very rude, and I found him extremely aggressive. It doesn't surprise me one bit that he punched another boy."
As much as I hate hearing her talk about my son that way, part of me wants to get more information out of her. What was Nico doing at her house that she found so unacceptable? Is there something else that I should be worried about? Janice is a little strange, but she's very observant. I'll give her that.
"I hate to say it," she adds, "but this is what happens when you go to work all day and leave your kids alone. There's a price to pay for having a career while also trying to be a mother."
"Nico is a good kid," I say through my teeth. "The move has just been hard on him."
"I'm not so sure about that," she retorts. "His behavior has been reprehensible. And frankly, I don't approve of your husband's behavior either. Enzo, I say. What did he do wrong?
Don't you think it's troubling how often your husband goes over to visit Suzette? Her eyes meet mine over the rim of her glasses. And I suspect it's more than you think.
My face gets hot. How dare she imply that my husband is messing around behind my back?
He's helping her with her yard work so she'll recommend him to new homeowners. It's completely innocent.
He's helping her with her yard work inside her house when her husband isn't home.
I hate the way a smile spreads across Janice's lips when she realizes that her words have finally hit home.
You're mistaken, I finally say.
No, she says. I'm not. I catch glimpses through the windows, Millie.
I glance over at 12 Locust Street. At that moment, Suzette emerges from her house, wearing a skimpy robe. Between her and Janice, it feels like I'm the only one who decided to get dressed this morning. Suzette grabs the mail out of the box mounted next to their front door and waves to us. Janice waves back, and I somehow will myself to do the same. I hold my breath until Suzette has gone back inside the house. When I look back at Janice, she's got a smirk on her face. I want to smack it off her.
So, what? I say. You're just watching the cul-de-sac all day? Spying on the other two houses?
Somebody should, she snips back at me. You might be better off if you did the same.
I follow Janice's gaze, which is directed at the front of my house. The front door swings open, and my husband comes out to collect the mail. He is still wearing his pajama pants, but he doesn't have on his shirt. He flashes us a broad smile and waves, and all I can think is, would it kill him to put on a shirt?
After all, Janice says to me, she's watching too.
29.
I can't believe I forgot my phone at home. It's a testament to how frazzled I have been lately. My phone is practically fused with my hand, yet I made it nearly all the way to work before realizing that I forgot to bring it. I am stunned that I did that. I may as well have gone to work without a shirt on. I spend a few minutes debating if it's worth going back to get it. Nico is back at school this week, and if I don't have my phone, I'll spend the whole day worrying if something is going on that I don't know about. So I turn around and drive back home to grab it. Thankfully, I don't have any meetings until 10, and traffic is light. I manage to make it back home in a record 20 minutes. And I enter the house through the garage. Martha is cleaning today, which means the house is filled with the scent of her citrus-scented cleaning fluid. She has started bringing her own products, and I love the way they smell. I should ask her where she gets them, for future reference. I have to admit, Martha is amazing. I'm still not convinced she isn't a cyborg, but I'm grateful Enzo insisted on hiring her. I'm also grateful he's talked me out of firing her. I check the kitchen and living room, but there's no sign of my phone. If Enzo were here, I would ask him to call it, but nobody seems to be home except for Martha. I hear her upstairs, running the vacuum. I suddenly recall noticing my phone battery was low and sticking it on the nightstand's charging station as I was getting dressed. It must still be there. I climb the stairs, and just as I get to the top, the vacuum stops.
I walk down the hallway to my bedroom, my flats nearly silent on the carpet, and I can just barely make out the sound of a drawer opening. I freeze, wondering why Martha is opening a drawer. I do the laundry myself, so that isn't something she's responsible for. What could she possibly need from a drawer? I quicken my steps, but I try to avoid the places where I've learned the floorboards tend to creak. I reach the master bedroom, and as quietly as I can, I peek inside. Martha is in the bedroom, as expected. One of my dresser drawers is hanging open, and she's peering inside. I hold my breath as I watch her lift out the jewelry box I keep in the drawer. She pries open the lid, and, as I watch, she removes a necklace and drops it into the pocket of her slacks. Wow, I don't know if I would have believed it if I didn't see it myself. "Excuse me," I speak up. Martha jumps away from the dresser, letting the jewelry box fall back inside as she slams it closed.
"Oh, hello, Millie. I didn't realize you were still here."
Is she really going to try to pass this off like she didn't just steal a necklace out of my drawer? "I saw what you did," I say. "I saw what you took." Martha always seems so utterly cool and collected, but she doesn't seem that way now, as her watery gray eyes dart around the room.
"I don't know what you're talking about. I'm just folding your clothes for you. I thought I would organize your drawers."
"Yeah, right. Empty your pockets."
"Millie," she says, "remember how you were wrong about the vase? I would never..."
"Empty your pockets." Martha squares her shoulders.
"I don't have to tolerate being spoken to this way. You can consider this my resignation."
She starts to walk past me with her head held high. Not so fast. Before she can get out of the room, I step in her path, blocking her. "I swear to God, Martha," I say. "I saw you put my necklace in your pocket, and you are not leaving this house until I get it back." Martha is about 2 inches taller than me and has at least 30 pounds on me. But I am younger and faster, and more importantly, I'm willing to fight dirty if I have to. My son isn't the only one who knows how to throw a punch. One way or another, I am getting my necklace back. Her gaze rakes over me, and it takes her a minute to figure out I am dead serious. Silently, she reaches into her pocket and pulls out the necklace studded with tiny diamonds that Enzo bought me for my birthday 2 years ago. Actually, they're cubic zirconia, and it's not worth much aside from the sentimental value. But that's a lot.
"I'm sorry," she mumbles. "I was just borrowing it so that..."
"Get out." She wipes her shaking hands on her stiff skirt. Up close, the lines on her face are etched deeper than I thought. And for the first time ever, her gray hair is coming loose from her sensible bun.
"Are you... will you tell Suzette about this?"
"Maybe." It would give me some degree of satisfaction to let Suzette know that her cleaning woman has been stealing. God knows why Martha decided to steal from me when everything Suzette owns is better than anything that I own. She takes a moment to gather her composure, and when she speaks again, her voice does not waver.
"If you tell her about me," she says, I will tell her about you.
A vein in my temple throbs. About me.
Suzette would be very interested to know that her new neighbor is an ex-con.
I take a step back, my heart pounding. My blood pressure right now is probably 1 billion over 1 million. It turns out I didn't imagine it the other day when I thought she emphasized the word criminal. Somehow, Martha knows all about my dark past. How did you find out? I manage.
Don't worry,
Martha says in a maddeningly calm voice.
Nobody else will know your secret. Not unless you talk to Suzette about me.
I hate that she's blackmailing me this way. But I have to go along with it. What choice do I have? If Suzette finds out about my past, she'll tell everyone. I can't even imagine the awkward PTA meetings. And what if the kids hear about it? That would be horrible. I don't want them to know about my past. Not until they're old enough to understand it. And maybe not even then. Fine, I hiss at her. I won't tell Suzette.
I'm pleased we have an understanding,
Martha says flatly. My cleaning woman brushes past me, jostling my shoulder as she heads toward the stairs. I follow her down the stairs and to the front door, just to make sure she leaves without stealing or destroying anything. It's only as she turns the lock to get out that I notice her hands are shaking.
30.
You fired her.
Enzo seems surprised when I tell him about what happened with Martha earlier while I'm making dinner. Since my pasta alla Norma all those weeks ago was not a raging success, I'm making macaroni and cheese for the gazillionth time because the kids will eat it. It's just easier that way.
She was stealing from us, I say. What was I supposed to do? Give her a raise?
He grabs some dishes from the cabinet next to the sink. He's not much of a cook, but he's always game to set the table and load the dishwasher after.
I am just saying she had a good job here. And with Suzette and Jonathan, why would she steal?
I don't know, I say irritably. Do you think I have an insight into the psychology of a thief? Maybe she's a kleptomaniac. He grins at me.
She never tried to corner me in the bedroom.
Not a nymphomaniac. My God. I roll my eyes. A kleptomaniac. Like those people who have a compulsion to steal.
That is a thing?
I read about it in my psychology class.
Yeah.
He pulls a handful of silverware from the drawer, although he never, ever seems to grab the right silverware. Somebody always ends up with two forks instead of a fork and a knife. I'm not sure how he manages that. Even if it was wrong when he took it out of the drawer, wouldn't he notice that while putting it on the table?
So, did you give her a final paycheck?
Enzo. I turn away from my simmering macaroni and cheese to look at him. She stole from us. She took the necklace you gave me, and she probably took that money you had in the drawer by the bed.
It was only $50.
I haven't told Enzo what Martha said to me before she left, about the way she threatened me. I can't quite bring myself to divulge all the details. And I'm not sure why. The children might not know about my time in prison, but Enzo knows everything. And yet,
He doesn't quite understand the shame I feel over it. He doesn't understand why I don't want the kids to know, and was in favor of telling them before they find out on their own. Anyway, I'm not handing over a paycheck to a woman who stole from me and threatened me. Enzo notoriously has a soft spot for women, possibly because of his sister Antonia, and how he felt that he could have prevented her death if he had protected her better. That's why he defended Nico for standing up for that girl. He doesn't seem to think that women are capable of doing anything bad. But he's dead wrong about that one. Frankly, after what we have been through together, he should know better. Look, I take a deep breath. I don't know why Martha stole from us, but it doesn't matter. We already have enough financial problems on our own without somebody stealing from us. Whatever her issues are, I can't deal with her right now. He cocks his head to the side.
What was your blood pressure this morning?
Enzo, that's not the point. He hangs his head. I know. I must do a better job bringing in money for our family. That's why I'm working so hard to build my business, and then we will have no money worries. I feel terrible how much he beats himself up about our money issues. We're not doing that badly. I wish he wouldn't dwell on it so much. And I worry the kids will overhear and get nervous too. Especially Ada. We're doing fine. I turn down the stove so I can put my arms around him. He quickly envelops me, and I rest my head on his firm shoulder. You're doing a great job, and I bet in another year or two, we'll be fine. Yes, he murmurs. Or maybe sooner. I don't know what he's talking about. Even though his business is growing, it's not growing that fast. 1 or 2 years is optimistic. We're going to be pinching pennies for at least the next several years. Sometimes, I wonder if it was all worth it. 31. The whole family is at Nico's Little League game. Ada doesn't usually want to go, but today she was agreeable to tag along. I'm glad she's here, because Nico hasn't quite been himself since his suspension a few weeks ago. But she's very clearly not interested in the game, based on the fact that she is sitting in the stadium with us, holding a paperback on her lap. Ada doesn't go anywhere without a book in her hand. What are you reading? I ask her. Her long, dark eyelashes flutter. She has olive skin like Enzo, which doesn't show embarrassment the way mine does. But I can always tell when I've made her uncomfortable. Sorry, she says. I'll put it away. It's okay, I say. I think baseball is pretty boring, too. I nod my head at Enzo, who is quite literally at the edge of his seat watching the game. He loves sports, but even more, he loves to watch Nico play sports. He likes it, though. I'm reading Stranger with My Face by Lois Duncan, she says. Oh, I loved that one when I was a kid. All her books, actually. I feel a twinge of sadness, thinking about my childhood and how it all went wrong. What might have happened if I hadn't attacked that boy and ended up killing him? Then again, I have a good life now. I love my husband, and I have 2 amazing kids. If I had to suffer a little hardship, or a lot of hardship, On the way to get there? That's just how it had to be. I take a swig from the water bottle I brought. It's only the middle of May, but the weekend is shaping up to be extremely hot. My phone says it's in the high 80s today. The kids look uncomfortable and listless. Nico comes up to bat, so I nudge Ada to put down her book. He hasn't had a hit all day, and he's got that frustrated look he gets on his face sometimes. He is a pretty good hitter, so he must be getting in his head, or something like that. I hope he gets a hit this time. The pitcher throws the ball right over the plate, and I hear a crack as the bat makes contact. Enzo shouts with excitement, "Yeah, Nico!" It bounces once and rolls into the field. Nico tosses his bat to the side and makes a run toward first base. The pitcher manages to grab the ball. With lightning-fast speed, he whips it in the direction of first base. Nico slides onto the plate just as the first baseman catches the ball. I cross my fingers and toes that he's not out, but then the umpire shakes his head.
No! No!
Enzo is suddenly on his feet, yelling,
"Not out! No!"
Apparently, Enzo thinks this was an unfair call, which doesn't necessarily mean it was an unfair call. Nico isn't any happier about this decision. The other kid is saying something to him, and he takes off his baseball cap and throws it on the ground. Nico is yelling something. I can make out the word bullshit. I hold my breath, willing my son to back off and return to the dugout. And that's when Nico throws the punch. I could tell he was prone to getting angry. He's gotten riled up during Little League games before. But I never saw him get violent before. He punches the first baseman right in the gut, and the poor kid goes down hard. My heart drops into my stomach as I watch it happening and scramble to my feet. Enzo witnesses it too. He freezes, falling suddenly silent. He was defending Nico about what happened on the playground, but this is harder to defend. That other kid didn't do anything wrong, and Nico punched him. I don't understand much Italian, but I can tell he's cursing under his breath.
Mili, he turns to me, his brow furrowed. Nicolas just punched that kid.
I saw.
Cazzo, he mutters. What is he thinking? We have to get him out of here.
The two of us make our way down to the field. The other kid is on the ground, sobbing. Nico is standing over him, breathing hard. The coach, a man named Ted, who is the father of one of the other boys, does not look thrilled. He's got pit stains under both his arms, and he looks like he is not enjoying being out here in the heat. And now, having to deal with my son punching another kid.
You gotta get him out of here,
Ted says to Enzo in his thick Long Island accent.
We got a no-tolerance policy about violence between the boys.
I am so sorry, Enzo says. It will never happen again.
Yeah, it won't.
Ted holds up his hands.
Sorry, Enzo. He's off the team.
Enzo opens his mouth to protest, but then he shuts it again. He argued Nico's case in the principal's office, but this is different. We saw what happened. He punched that kid over nothing. Instead, Enzo turns to our son, who is standing on the side, kicking his sneaker into the dirt.
Come on, Enzo says. We go home now.
32.
We don't talk much in the car, partially because Ada is there. Enzo is the one driving, and his knuckles are bloodless on the steering wheel. Every time I glance over my shoulder, Nico is staring out the window. He doesn't even seem upset over getting kicked off the team just a few weeks before the end of the season. It's like it doesn't even matter. What is wrong with my son? When we get into the house, Enzo instructs Nico to stay in the living room. Nico drops onto the sofa and reaches for the remote, but Enzo shakes his head.
No TV, he says. You sit there and be quiet. I will talk to your mother.
I follow my husband to the kitchen, and when we get inside, he turns to face me. He takes a shaky breath.
Okay, that was not so good.
You think? I sputter.
He is a good kid, Enzo insists. He just
punched another boy in the gut for no reason.
Not for no reason. That was unfair call. He was not out.
I grit my teeth. That doesn't matter, and you know it. You don't punch another kid just because you don't like what the umpire said.
He was upset. He's 9 years old, not three. It's unacceptable. Boys are aggressive.
He runs a hand through his thick black hair.
That is normal boy behavior. It's good for him to fight.
I stare at my husband in astonishment. Given his reaction at the game, I had hoped we were finally on the same page about Nico's fighting. But clearly, we are not. The fact that Nico's behavior has got him both suspended and kicked off the Little League team is a sign that things are out of control. And yet, Enzo is still defending what Nico did. This is not normal behavior for a boy, I say firmly. Enzo is quiet for a minute. I want him to agree with me that punching other kids is not okay for a boy to do. And it bothers me that he won't do that. He always seems very controlled in his behavior, especially compared with me. I've never seen him throw a punch, even when someone deserved it. But he's done it. That's a fact. His fists are the reason he's in this country to begin with. Tell me, I say, is this how you behaved when you were 9? Again, he hesitates.
Yes, I had fights with fists back when I was a kid. Sometimes I did. It was not a bad thing. Makes you tough.
That is not the right answer.
Okay, okay, he shakes his head. It's different here in America. I see this now.
I'm not 100% sure we are a united front, but we go back out of the kitchen to where Nico is sitting on the couch in the living room. He is leaning back on the pillows, staring at a crack on the ceiling. He rolls his head to the side when we walk into the room. Am I grounded again? He asks. He's already been grounded. He was just grounded like 5 minutes ago. It didn't seem to make the slightest difference. I sit beside him on the sofa, and Enzo takes the chair next to the sofa. Nico, I say, you have to learn to control yourself. What you did today was really wrong. You know that, don't you? I'm sorry, he says, although he truthfully doesn't sound very sorry. Grayson was being a jerk.
It doesn't matter if he's the biggest jerk in the world. You can't hit him.
Fine. It disturbs me that Nico doesn't seem more upset over all this. Why isn't he crying? Why isn't he begging for forgiveness? Isn't that normal behavior for a 9-year-old boy who's done something wrong? I look over at Enzo, trying to gauge if he thinks this seems normal. But I'm sure if I asked him, he would say something like, "Boys aren't supposed to cry." But there's something wrong. Lately, Nico has just become so cold. "What is my punishment?" he asks, like he's impatient to get it over with.
"Well, you are off the team," Enzo says. "So, no more baseball."
Nico shrugs. "Okay." Enzo seems thrown by how casual Nico's response is to being barred from baseball. The two of them used to practice every day. Nico used to beg for it.
"When is Dad going to get home? We gotta practice."
"And no devices for a month," Enzo adds.
Nico nods. He clearly expected that.
"Is that it? Can I go?"
"Yes," Enzo says.
Nico doesn't waste a second. He leaps off the couch and runs up the steps to his room. He slams the door behind him. A very angsty move for a 9-year-old boy. Enzo is staring at the steps after him. His expression is unreadable. But he doesn't look happy.
"I think," I say, "we might want to consider getting him in for therapy."
He looks at me blankly.
"Therapy?"
"A talking therapist," I clarify. His eyes widen like I've suggested we toss our son off the roof to see if he could fly.
"No, no, that is ridiculous. He does not need that."
"It might help."
"For what?"
Enzo throws up his arms.
"He is just acting like a normal boy. It is all your uptight American rules. Nico is fine. He is fine."
I can't argue with him when he's acting like this, but he's wrong. I'm afraid there's something wrong with Nico that won't get better without professional help. I'm afraid that between me and my husband, Nico has inherited a combination of genes that has given him a propensity for violence much stronger than other kids his age. So, when dinner is over and the kids have gone upstairs for the night, and I've got a moment to myself, the first thing I Google is my child a psychopath? Amazingly, there are quite a few posts about it. Apparently, I'm not the only woman whose child is having issues. One website has a list of common characteristics found in kids with psychopathic tendencies. I skim the list, growing increasingly concerned. A lack of guilt after misbehaving. Nico barely apologized after punching either of those two boys. He didn't seem at all upset over what he did. Constant lying. He used to tell us when he broke something around the house, but he didn't say a word about breaking that vase until we confronted him. And I get the feeling there's more he's not telling us. Cruelty to animals. What happened to that praying mantis? After claiming he loved that pet, all of a sudden, he flushed it down the toilet. Selfish and aggressive behavior. Well, what's more aggressive than punching a kid in the gut because you weren't called safe on first base? Enzo might not be worried, but I am.
and it makes me feel even worse to imagine there's a chance he might have inherited some of these tendencies from me. I mean, I don't think I'm a psychopath, but I didn't go to prison for picking daisies. I'll give the dust a chance to settle, but I refuse to do nothing. If my son needs saving from himself, I'm going to save him.
33.
I'm walking back to my house from the bus stop when Suzette emerges from her front door to collect her mail. She must be leaving for a house showing soon because she is dressed to the nines in a skirt suit with red heels that are so high I would fall on my face if I tried to walk in them. Her hair is so perfectly coiffed, it almost looks plastic. She waves to me, and it's hard to smile when I wave back, but I force it. I'm not in the mood for Suzette, so when she comes down her steps to talk to me, I almost consider making a run for it, but she's pretty quick, and before I can reach my front door, she has overtaken me.
"Millie," she says, "how are you doing?"
"Fine. How are you?" As Suzette smooths her hair, I notice a diamond-studded bracelet around her wrist that catches the sun. It looks a little like the necklace that Martha tried to steal from me, except I assume that hers is made from real diamonds. I hope Suzette is keeping that bracelet somewhere safe. "Nice bracelet," I comment.
"Thank you."
She gazes down at the bracelet. "It was a gift from someone very special. And I absolutely love your..." She rakes her gaze over me, clearly struggling to find something to compliment me on.
"Have you lost some weight? Your face doesn't look nearly as puffy."
Apparently, that is the best she can do. Also, I don't think I've lost any weight. I'm just as puffy as ever. "Maybe," is all I say.
"Anyway," Suzette says, "I've been meaning to speak with you."
Sure. What's up?" She flashes me a blindingly white smile. I wonder if she has caps on her teeth.
"So here's the thing," she says. "On the day before trash pickup, would you mind putting your trash out a little later in the evening?"
I stare at her. "What are you talking about? Nico doesn't put it out until after dinner."
"Right," she says. "And you guys must eat dinner super early, because when we're eating dinner, we can see your trash out in front of the house, and it's there the entire evening. There's trash sitting on the sidewalk from like 7 in the evening until the next morning." She sniffs. "Honestly, Millie, it's unsightly."
"Did you mention this to Enzo?" I ask. She seems to speak with him constantly, so I'm not sure why she's telling me about all this.
"He just seems so busy. I wouldn't want to bother him with something so trivial."
"Okay.
Plus, Nico takes care of the trash, doesn't he? The kids are more your domain, I assumed."
Suzette somehow assumes I'm a 1950s housewife. But I don't feel like getting into it with her. "Fine," I grumble. "What time would you like him to take out the trash?"
"Well, no earlier than 11, certainly."
"His bedtime is 10, I say through my teeth. "He's 9.
"Oh," she taps her chin. "Perhaps you should take out the trash then?"
She has got to be kidding me. I'm tempted to tell this woman where she can shove that trash can. But at that moment, a truck pulls up in front of my house. A man with a big, shaggy mustache and potbelly climbs out of the truck,
a sour expression on his face. It takes me a second to recognize him as the plumber who came by a few days ago. I called him to fix our downstairs toilet, which was taking about an hour to flush. Enzo kept insisting he could fix it and we didn't need professional help. But it seemed like every time he tried to fix it, the flush took 10 minutes longer. I didn't even tell him I called the plumber. He thinks the toilet magically fixed itself.
Hey!
The plumber, whose name completely escapes me at the moment, ambles down the walkway to where I'm standing with Suzette.
I was here a few days ago to do a job, and you wrote me a bum check.
What? I did? I stammer. I don't know how that's possible. I keep track of every penny that goes in and out of our checking account. We don't have a lot of excess cash, but I'm certain we had more than enough to cover the $300 check I wrote for the plumber. The plumber is not a small man. He's well over 6 feet, towering over me, and I have to take a step back as he comes closer.
You sure did, lady,
he growls. Suzette seems entertained by this interaction. Why can't she go back to her house? This is so embarrassing. I'm so sorry, I say. I thought there was enough in the account to cover it. Do you take credit cards?
I don't, he spits at me. I told you when I fixed your toilet, only cash or check. And now for you, only cash.
Well, that's a problem. I don't have $300 in cash just lying around. I probably have $40 in my wallet if I'm lucky. Enzo has already taken off for the day, but he doesn't carry much money either. I say, if you wait, I can go to an ATM. The plumber hikes up his pants and plants himself squarely on the sidewalk in front of my house.
I'm not moving one step until I get paid, lady.
You know what? Suzette pipes up. I might have some cash in the house. Give me a minute. She dashes back into the house, walking admirably well in those 4-inch heels. A minute later, she bursts from the front door with a wad of cash. She holds it out to the plumber, who immediately starts counting it.
It's all there, Suzette assures him.
The plumber finishes counting the cash and nods at her.
You got that right, pretty lady.
He tips his grimy baseball cap in her direction.
Thank you muchly.
He gives me one last dirty look and then climbs back into his truck. I'm pretty sure I am blackballed from that plumbing service. Hopefully, Enzo can get better at fixing the pipes. Suzette watches the plumber drive away, then turns to me with an expectant look on her face. I know what she wants, and I'm going to have to give it to her.
Thank you so much, Suzette, I say. I promise I'll pay you back every penny.
Oh, take your time. She toys with the diamond bracelet on her wrist, which glints in the sunlight.
Honestly, Jonathan and I have more money than we know what to do with. You can't even imagine how much we pay in taxes.
Way to rub it in my face.
I don't want Suzette to think of me as some impoverished charity case, racking up debts all over town. And I especially dislike the idea of owing anything to her. Technically, we never paid for her broken window, but that was different because Nico agreed to do chores. I'll pay her back today if I can. Except, can I? I thought we had more than enough money in the checking account to cover the plumbing bill, but obviously we don't. Where did the money go?
Enzo and I always discuss large purchases. He wouldn't have just taken the money out without telling me. Would he?
34.
After the plumber leaves, I log into the computer to check my bank account. A few days ago, we had more than $1,000 in the checking account. I watch the screen, waiting to confirm that the money is still there. My heart sinks when the balance of the checking account pops up on the screen. $213. What the hell is going on? We're missing about $1,000 from our checking account, and we are not extremely wealthy like our neighbors. That's not an amount that we can just shrug off. I access the transactions in the history. I do see a $1,000 withdrawal from a few days ago. Presumably, that is the culprit. Except, who took that out of our account? It certainly wasn't me. I can't imagine Enzo would do that without mentioning it to me. I'm running late for work, but this is far more important. If somebody stole money from our bank account, I need to do something about it ASAP. So I call the bank and end up on hold with them for 15 minutes, while I glance at my watch and text one of my coworkers to cover me at a meeting that I am definitely going to miss.
"Hello, this is Serena, your customer service representative."
A perky female voice pipes up. "Hi," I clear my throat. "I need your help regarding some money that is missing from my bank account."
"Oh dear," Serena says.
I vehemently agree with that sentiment.
"Let me see what I can find out for you."
I have to hand over all my bank information, and then I get to wait as I listen to the sound of keys tapping in the background. And then more keys tapping. And then more waiting.
"Sorry, the system is so slow today," Serena says cheerfully. "It's just one of those days, you know."
I'm not in the mood to make small talk while I'm trying to figure out why money is missing from my bank account. "Uh-huh."
"Ah, okay," she says triumphantly. "The withdrawal was made 2 days ago by Enzo Accardi, who is also on the account. Is that your husband?"
"Yes, but," I frown. "My husband didn't..."
"Did he? Is he saying he didn't withdraw the money?" she asks me.
"No, I mean, I thought he would have told me, but..." Serena seems like she's at a loss for words. I suppose family drama isn't her job.
"Oh, thank you for your help," I mumble. I
better have a talk with my husband. Maybe he forgot."
"I'm sure he forgot,"
she says in a super patronizing voice.
"Is there anything else I can help you with today?"
"Yes, you can tell me why my husband took a bunch of money out of our account without saying a damn word to me about it." I hang up the phone and stare at the screen for a good minute. I am now extremely late for work, but I can't focus on anything until I call Enzo and ask him what happened with that money. And I'm not sure why the thought of doing that makes me so uneasy. I trust him. If he took that money out of the account, he had a good reason. Finally, I select his name from my favorites. If he's working, he often doesn't answer his phone, but ever since the incident with Nico getting suspended, he's been answering immediately.
"Mili," he says, "what is wrong?"
I rarely call him during the day, so he recognizes this is not a social call. "There's money missing from our checking account." I had been hoping for a string of angry Italian curses, but the way he becomes dead silent confirms that this is not news to him, even if Serena hadn't already confirmed it. I had written a check for $300, I continue, when he doesn't seem to be commenting. And the check bounced.
Oh, he sucks in a breath. So, what happened?
Suzette lent me the money, I say.
Well, that is good.
So I called the bank to figure out where the money went, I go on. And they told me that you withdrew $1,000. More silence. He's not planning on making this easy for me. So, I say, did you? There's another long silence.
I did, he says eventually.
Okay, that seems like an awful lot of cash to withdraw from our joint bank account without telling me.
Yes.
He's silent for a few more beats, and I can't help but think to myself that it sounds like he's stalling while he makes up a lie.
I am so sorry. We were short this month, and I needed the money to replace some equipment that broke. I thought I would have it back in the account before you noticed. I'll have it back tomorrow.
Some equipment that broke? I repeat.
Yes, I need new lawn aerator and rototiller. It's expensive.
I swear, sometimes I think he's just making up these words. But I guess it sounds like a reasonable excuse, so I choose to believe him. It makes sense that if his equipment broke, he'd need to replace it immediately. It's better than the alternative, which is that my husband is lying to me.
35.
Nico is sneaking out, or at least that's what it seems like when I hear the back door opening on a sunny Saturday afternoon. Thank God we never bothered to oil the hinges, because I can hear that door opening and closing all the way across town. I toss aside my book and reach the back door just in time to catch Nico before he takes off.
Excuse me, mister. I clear my throat. Where do you think you're going?
He looks up at me without a trace of guilt on his face. Spencer's house. You said I could go whenever I want. I did say that, but I thought he had been banished from Janice's home. Spencer's mom is okay with that? I ask.
She said it's okay as long as we stay in the backyard.
I'm relieved. I hated it when Janice said Nico couldn't play with her son, so I'm glad he's back in her good graces. Apparently, he's not allowed inside her immaculate house, but that's understandable.